Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
What people need to think is, you know, what's going on in London and England right now, it's going to be going on in more places. Or at least the kind of public sentiment and feeling and hopelessness that is a manifestation of, that is what more and more people are going to be feeling in Canada, in the United States, and in all the countries of Europe.
That's the voice of author and economist Robin Hanal. On this week's show, we speak to Robin about the ongoing riots in England, the downgrading of the U.S. credit rating and the ongoing financial crisis, and how to chart a realistic way forward. So stay tuned.
When we think about the economic crisis and we think about the stories that are being told to us, we need to question the storyteller. Why is it that we're still allowing Wall Street to determine what our economic development, our prosperity ought to look like, and how the very people who broke it are being invited to put it back together? To speak about this, I have Robin Hanal. He's an economist, the author of many books. His latest book is Green Economics Confronting the Ecological Crisis. Thank you so much for being with us, Robin.
It's great being with you again.
Now, we are seeing, again, a wave of fear shattering through our society as more people wonder what will happen next. What will the GEA countries do in the face of a collapsing economy, of a downgrading of the U.S. credit and ability to borrow?
One thing that people should understand, and it's important for people to understand this, is that the economy is going to get worse, that this was all unnecessary. Even after, you know, the financial sort of crash of 2008, it was really caused by just the financial industry being allowed, you know, to engage in outrageously risky activity through sort of decades of deregulation. Even after that occurred, had governments come in and implemented sort of policies that have been understood for decades, what do you do in a financial crisis that leads to a recession? Had governments come in and done the right thing, we would be well on the road to recovery. And the right thing to do was to have serious financial regulation. The right thing to do was, to the extent that the financial industry was being bailed out by the taxpayers, and the taxpayers are in a position and have every right, and it's just crazy not to basically impose new rules on the financial sector. And one of those new rules in the United States would have been, you have to take a 20% haircut on all those mortgage-backed securities that you created and turned out to be toxic. Because part of what is, you know, preventing economic recovery in the United States is we still have a housing crisis. We have a housing industry in crisis that's in decline. Foreclosure rates are still rising. And as long as that's happening and people are losing money every month on the value of their one commodity, their one asset, which is their house, it's very difficult to orchestrate a recovery. And then we needed a strong dose of fiscal stimulus. We needed Keynesian economics that comes in and says, when you are suffering from a huge case of, you know, aggregate demand not being sufficient to put everybody to work, the government temporarily needs to come in with spending programs and actually become the employer of last resort. None of that happened. Instead, in Europe, we have, you know, austerity being meted out by the European Bank and the European Commission to the weaker economies in Europe, while the stronger economies, particularly Germany, do not do anything to stimulate their economies, which would be the thing that would help the Greeces and the Spains and the Portugals and the Ireland, you know, to grow out of their crisis. Here in the United States, we had sort of a weak stimulus at the beginning of the Obama administration, and then all of a sudden our president pivots and accepts this story that somehow we have to deal with long-run deficit and long-run debt problems in the middle of the Great Recession. And we've been tied up in that, and the sort of where that leads is what people have just witnessed, a complete, total political debacle in the United States in terms of economic policy. In Canada and in England, you have right-wing conservative governments coming in and administering fiscal austerity and using the crisis to essentially erode all of the gains of things such as healthcare programs, pension programs, unions, wages that are decent wages that allow for a middle class to grow in capitalism. You see Tories and you see conservative governments in Canada and England using this opportunity to basically turn the clock back to the 1920s. And in the foreseeable future, what now people should understand is none of this is going to change. And my advice to progressives is we need to stop being surprised and then whining about how it is that sort of traditional political parties are not protecting us and serving our interests. We need to look ahead as far as 2015. Right now there are riots in England. And everybody is commenting, those riots seem, they're not political riots. These aren't people who were demonstrating, you know, against, this wasn't the cutback, the no cutback demonstration. This wasn't the students demonstrating against a tripling of their university fees. It was the first thing that the Cameron government came in and did. Instead, these are essentially, these are young people who have been trapped in the negative side of neoliberalism for 20 to 30 years. These are people who basically have been living in depression conditions, their families, their life prospects, you know, have been abysmal for a long, long time, even while the sort of upper echelon in global capitalism was riding high. And now what they've been told is, you know what, it's perfectly apparent that all the rulers in the world, all the powerful people in the world, they're just grabbing and taking whatever they want. And why shouldn't we? I mean, the commentary on, well, let's, how do we explain this? How do we interpret this? Do we defend it? You know, do we condemn it? All of that really is beside the point. The point is that those people have now been told, you have no prospects of getting jobs. You have no prospects of getting a decent education. And they are basically behaving like people who have nothing to lose and who are watching their betters behave in essentially the same way, which is just steal and rip off from everybody you can. So what we need to think through is, how are we going to get ourselves in a situation so progressive political forces and progressive-minded people and institutions, we're in a different position 2 or 3 years down the road, so that when this kind of thing happens, there will actually be a political movement that can give it direction and can say, we have answers, and we have built up institutional power so we can start to implement some of those answers. I think we need to think ahead instead of wringing our hands. In the United States, it's particularly the phenomena of just every day you read more and more on the left about how we've been betrayed by Obama, all of which is true, but none of which is solving our problems anymore.
That's a really important point to make, especially now. I was listening to a program the other day, and the right-wing pundit was saying that the U.S. needs to get serious about cutting social spending because they're borrowing 40% of what they spend. How would you respond to this?
I think that the United States right now, the federal government, is paying 1.4% of GDP on servicing the debt. That is, by international and historic standards, well within the norm. There is nothing out of balance, unsustainable about that. We are running large budget deficits currently, and there's three reasons for that. The first reason is we're still in the Great Recession. People's incomes are way down, and therefore tax collections are way down. The major thing that's causing the sort of large size deficit in the United States presently is the recession. And if the recession gets worse, then that deficit will get worse as a result. And that's why the right thing to do is fix the recession, because that's the only way that you're going to get tax revenues to go back up. That's the only way that even in the middle run or the long run, you are going to sort of improve the deficit situation in the United States. The other two reasons we're running large deficits is we're carrying out three wars. We have 700 bases in 120 countries around the world. And these are bases that are luxury expenditure conditions. This is cost overrun spending, you know, to have 700 bases. We're running three wars, and we simply can't afford to do that. The Republicans refuse to raise taxes on the wealthy. The Democrats refuse to insist that that be done as part of any negotiations. And, of course, the military-industrial complex insists that you can't shut us down, you can't stop our wars. And the third thing is that the Bush tax cuts were the final sort of straw that broke the camel's back as far as revenue collection for federal government. That those giveaways that now have been extended basically are huge tax cuts for the wealthy, and that's where the deficit comes from. So in the short run, you want to solve the deficit, you do something effective to get us out of the recession. And that's not going to happen. The government of the United States is powerless to do that at this point. The Republicans have essentially succeeded in vetoing and making impossible any sort of serious fiscal stimulus that will help us, you know, reduce the recessionary dynamics in the United States. People need to prepare for 2-3 years down the road. What people need to think is, you know, what's going on in London and England right now, it's going to be going on in more places. Or at least the kind of public sentiment and feeling and hopelessness that is a manifestation of, that is what more and more people are going to be feeling in Canada, in the United States, and in all the countries of Europe. The question is, as people feel more and more that way, because ruling elites continue to go ahead and insist on sort of the kind of policies that are not going to solve economic problems, but are just going to make this, going to make the overall economic situation far worse, what is it that we are going to do to prepare ourselves so that we can start doing something effective about it?
Here's where I have to, you know, ask the question, because we always seem to blame, you know, our political status or whatever is happening in our country on the person that's at the seat of power. During the Ronald Reagan era, it seemed to me that he got a lot of things accomplished. Bill Clinton got us NAFTA and, you know, completely decimated the economy in Mexico, but it created a lot of wealth for a few people in North America. Under George Bush, we saw a president who stole the election, then was able to not only co-opt the American public and, you know, basically unleash war, endless war on the world. And you're telling me Obama can't change the taxation system? Obama can't act in response?
Well, okay, I misspoke there a little bit. Could the President of the United States actually take advantage of this crisis to send us in the right direction? Yes, he could, but this president is not going to do that. Financially, in terms of his campaign contributions and his electoral strategy, he is tied so closely to Wall Street and the financial industry in terms of where he is hoping to get his money to run for re-election that he cannot do anything that angers them. At this point, there isn't a single economist. I mean, at the beginning of his administration, we had Larry Summers. Larry Summers was a disaster. He was part of the reason the stimulus was way too small. He was part of the reason that we didn't move in the right direction. Larry Summers was tied to Wall Street, etc. But at least he was an economist. He does understand that we now have, you know, we are now headed into a double dip and that some sort of fiscal stimulus is now desperately needed. But Obama doesn't even have an economist advising him in the White House anymore. He has people who are completely from the Wall Street community and mindset about how it is you handle this. They're still telling him, you know, you have to keep giving out more presents to the financial industry and things will trickle down. Obama's going to run a campaign that basically says, you have to vote for me because you should be very afraid of the Republicans. He's going to tell us what we really know, which is these Republicans are scary folks and they can do scary things. We saw him do scary things with Bush Cheney, and they now have even scarier people running around out there. They have people who are pursuing economic policies that are so insane that even Wall Street understands that, you know, continuing you know, to prioritize the silliness over deficits while the economy sinks deeper into a recession isn't even in Wall Street's interest. They're starting to get worried about whether or not the right-wing Republicans, the Tea Party, is completely out of hand. They're very useful when they push the agenda to the point where progressives are getting smashed and smashed. On the other hand, they are really crazy in terms of the idea that no tax is a good tax. Sensible capitalists know that you have to have taxes and you have to have a government that takes care of things that you know that private sector doesn't take care of. In particular, they understand you have to tax somebody so you can give us out favors to corporations. Obama has now put himself in a situation. He didn't have to be there. If he had gone out, if even a year ago he had gone out and said, you know, our problem is we need jobs. People aren't getting jobs yet. Maybe some parts of the economy are recovering, basically the banking sector since we bailed them out. But the people aren't getting jobs and the people's houses are still being foreclosed on. I'm going to do that. Now, the Republicans would have opposed that, but he could have gone on TV. He should have been. There was somebody wrote a commentary saying, if I were him, I would have sat on the couch of an unemployed person in front of the TV cameras every day, and I would have been sending bills to Congress knowing full well that the Republicans in the House were going to, you know, refuse to approve them. I would have been sending legislation to Congress called Jobs Bill 1, Jobs Bill 2, Jobs Bill 3, daring them to say no, no, no. I would have been running a campaign like that, and if he had done that, he would be immensely popular right now, and he would have played the role that we needed somebody to play to try and push this crisis in a progressive direction instead of a reactionary direction. But he has blown that historic opportunity. And now progressives need to realize that Obama and the Democratic Party, yes, they'll run a campaign in 2012 that says jobs, 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 but you cannot do nothing to provide jobs for 3.5 years and then expect people to enthusiastically to support you when you say, well, now I want to provide jobs. And look at those other people. They're really scary folks. We're not going to vote for the scary folks. I mean, we'll be scared, as we should be, and we won't vote for them. But there will be no enthusiasm. There can't be enthusiasm on the part of the progressive community when the progressive community has been betrayed at every turn for 3.5 years by the Obama administration.
How do we, the populace, need to react to this in the face of the aggression we're facing?
Let's talk briefly about what the Wisconsin recall election, you know, basically tell us. For your audience, if you don't remember, in Wisconsin, a Republican governor and Republican legislature enacted just horrendous legislation in the middle of the winter. They basically decertified the public unions. They engaged in massive cuts, you know, in government programs for education, health care, et cetera. And there was a tremendous outcry saying, this is just unacceptable. I mean, this is just beyond the pale. We have a progressive tradition, at least amongst the half of the population of Wisconsin. We simply can't sit still and let this happen. So we had all the demonstrations in the middle of a Wisconsin winter, which you Canadians understand. You can understand, you know, what it means to get people out under those weather conditions. Just massive numbers of people, you know, who stayed out and demonstrated in the hundreds of thousands for weeks and weeks and weeks. Well, the upshot of all that was that in the end, what the progressive strategy was, well, we're going to do a recall election, because if we can successfully recall three of the Republican state senators, then essentially we can prevent these programs from being enacted at the state level. So all the time and energy, you know, for the last 3 months have gone into this recall election. It's the most expensive recall election in the history of the United States by a considerable margin. I mean, nobody has ever spent this kind of money on state senator races, recall races. Well, they came up short. There were six that were recalled, and the Republicans managed to hold on to four of those senator seats, and two were replaced by Democrats. On the one hand, you can look at the campaign that progressives mounted coming out of those mass demonstrations of the winter and say, wow, that was a good effort. a lot of smart strategy went into those elections, a lot of hard work, a lot of people just getting out and pounding on doors and knocking on neighbors' doors and reminding them to vote, telling them how important it was. All of that was done by the progressive forces. On the other side, now the Supreme Court of the United States has allowed unlimited amounts of corporate money to come into elections without even being traceable where it's coming from. So $30 to $40 million of money came in from the outside to basically try and buy the election for the Republican senators. I think we've seen a preview of the 2012 election. Progressives will fight hard in the 2012 election. We will fight hard to try and keep progressive Democratic congressmen and senators from being unelected. I suspect we will try less hard to sort of get out a vote for Obama. It's very hard. You can go on the internet every day. You'll be reading blogs and posting saying, you know, I believe this guy when he said that he wanted to do something different. And I gave him money, and I've never given money before. But I'll never do that again. I don't even know if I can bring myself to vote for him. So that kind of lack of enthusiasm from his progressive base is going to hamper Obama himself. On the other side, the Republicans have now fine-tuned their new machine of how to use their money to basically buy elections. The oligarchy in the United States is now in a position where they can simply buy elections. I'm almost certain that what will happen is we will see a massive dose of that. So I think there's two possibilities in terms of, you know, what the outcome is going to be. You're going to see more state legislatures becoming Republican. You're going to see more governors becoming Republican. That's how I read the results of the trends in Wisconsin. I think when you extend those to the nation, that's the likely outcome. Obama will either win the election because there are enough people afraid of the Republican candidate that they vote for him unenthusiastically, or he will lose. And to a great extent, that hinges on who's the Republican candidate. If the Republicans nominate somebody who it's difficult to portray as a scary, scary person, then Obama is going to be a one-term president. If the Republicans nominate somebody that Obama can successfully paint as a scary person, then he may win a second term. But look at what the outcome is in either case. The House will be more heavily Republican than before. The Senate may go Republican. And so you'll either have an Obama who's been reelected by betraying progressive values and progressive forces and progressive base, governing with an even more Republican-controlled legislature, or you will have a Republican president and you will have Republican legislature. We'll be back in the first years of the Bush period. People need to start planning for that in the United States. That is what's going to happen. And it's foolish to think anything else is going to happen. And that means, well, what do we want to be in a position? What do we want to be able to do in 2013, in 2014, when we have an Obama in the White House who is literally, at that point, he will be succeeding in giving away Social Security and Medicare. Or we have a Republican government that is basically like the Canadian government right now and the British government right now. We have right-wing government, that's what we're with, and we have deteriorating social and economic conditions for absolutely everybody except the very, very top. That's the situation people need to be planning for. What do we need to do now to be building our organizations, our political strategies for the year 2013-2012. Because in the U.S., there's very, very little that we can successfully do to prevent the 2012 elections from coming out pretty much the way it's obvious they are going to come out.
You know, you are the author of many books, and one of your books is Green Economics, Confronting the Ecological Crisis. And I think that with every crisis, there's opportunities. You know, in Latin America, you know, was where we are today, you know, 10 years, 20 years ago, with mass repression, you know, governments that were run by dictatorships. We had death squads, you know, persecution people for speaking out. And I think that we need to realize that it never changes from the top. change always comes from the bottom. And ultimately, it really doesn't matter whether we have Obama or Harper sitting at that seat, because that seat is useless unless we, the people, give them that power to act with impunity. And I think that's what we need to remember. Latin America has learned that lesson through, you know, rivers of blood. But they're standing up. People with a lot less resources than we have here are standing up against their governments and saying, this is how we want to see it. You know, we see the example of Bolivia, where even nature has rights, you know, where they're starting to develop new ways of seeing their society. And, you know, they realize that a president, you know, could be someone that we raise up from our movements, or it could be someone who is imposed and we just, you know, pretend that we have rights and that we have a voice. So it really is up to us. So on that note, what kind of planning should we be doing in North America to channel that force, you know, because those riots will come here. We see the riots now in England, and of course Cameron is saying, oh, it has nothing to do with mass poverty, it has nothing to do with austerity, it's all about culture. But we know that's not the case. We know that this are happening in the very poorest area, where people are completely tapped out, where they just, you know, can't take it anymore. So what kind of plan should we be doing in North America and channeling that resistance so that it creates that transformative change that we want?
Sylvia, I think you're absolutely right. And I did not mean to paint a picture as totally black and bleak. I don't feel that way. And I don't think that's the way we need to feel. But you're absolutely right. If people look back at Latin America, the question is, well, what was going on in Latin America in the 80s and the late 80s and the early 90s? That was a very bleak period. The 1980s was, I mean, they literally named it the lost decade for Latin America. It was a terrible period. And progressive organizations and movements, social movements of different kinds, they built movements, they built institutions, they built campaigns, they built organizations. That was what they were doing. And they were doing it in the context of governments at that point, you know, either dictatorial governments or right-wing governments, even if they were elected, that were, you know, that were not helping in any way and were aggravating social problems. You now have a majority of governments in Latin America who actually are progressive-oriented. And it's because those social movements sort of, for a decade in advance, basically, they kept plugging away. They didn't put their faith in sort of a short-run fix. They didn't say, oh, we're going to focus on the next election and see if we can elect, you know, work really hard to elect the lesser of an evil and hope that somehow this is what's going to save us. I think progressives need to understand, in the short run, we are not going to be able to change the governing outcomes. And the governing outcomes are going to create objective conditions that are even more miserable. And then we need to concentrate on, when the objective conditions are more miserable for more people, how do we talk to those people? How do we communicate with those people who are increasingly dissatisfied? How do we convince them that there are answers to the problems and that our programs are answers that solve their problems? We have to think more like that.
Well said. Thank you so much for being with us. We have to leave it there. Thank you again for being with us. My guest is Robin Hanel. He is the author of Green Economics, Confronting the Ecological Crisis. Thank you again for being with us today.
Very, very happy to be with you.
You too. Take care.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.